What happens if I treat you with the same disrespect you're showing me? How about if I treat you the way I treated Mick Foley last night? What happens then, Jim? Who saves you? Who comes to your rescue? Oh, I know. Stone Cold! Stone Cold! Stone Cold!
So here's the bottom line, as Stone Cold would say, as it relates to me and you, and I'm just being dead honest with you, with no disrespect. You want to be called the best in the world? Then what I suggest that you do is you accept John Cena's challenge, you walk into Hell in a Cell, and you kick his ass. And if you do that, then I will be the first man in line to look you in the eye and say, CM Punk, by God, you are the best in the world. But until then, we got nothing to talk about.
You're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live, your source for news, views, and opinions on everything wrestling, from the big leagues to the local scene. Now, here's James McDonald and Corey Callahan.
It's Thursday evening, Smack Talk Radio Live back on the air, October 4th, 2012. Sitting in the Smack Talk studios, I'm Corey Callahan, sitting not next to that guy, but the man, James McDonald. James, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing very good after an amazing intro like that, my friend. Be honest with you, I'm on the downgrade here, or the tail end of a little bit of a bad cold, so if I sound a little bit nasally or you hear a sniffle or something like that, I do apologize. But nevertheless, that is not going to stop me from sitting in the studios here with you, talking professional wrestling for the next half hour to 45 minutes.
So you start the show off with an excuse, eh? You're just throwing it out there.
Was that an excuse?
So you've just set yourself up. You know, if you're bad from here on out, you're blaming it on the cold. That's not a good way to start the show, James.
Oh, wow. Wait, okay, we go from a good intro to a burial. All right, let's continue.
You know I can't let you. I have to get
no,
one.
No, I know. You can't let me slide on these things.
www.smacktalkradiolive.com, facebook.com/smacktalkradio. And if you're not on Twitter already, my God, get with the times.
Get trendy. Come on.
At SRL Radio. Huge week in wrestling, James, but an even bigger show tonight on Smack Talk Radio Live. We got a very big interview lined up.
Woo-woo, you know it.
We'll get to it for sure. Now, how about the big news today in the sports world? The NHL canceling the first 2 weeks of the regular season. Question, do you care?
Really, at this point, no. And I think I'm in the same boat as the majority of most hockey fans at this point, where, no, we're just beyond the point of caring, because it's just a group of greedy billionaires arguing over who's getting more money, and you know, they know that no matter how long the season is canceled or whatever, fans are still going to come back at the end of it all. So,
I've said this about the WWE before, and I'll say it about hockey. When the NHL does come back, fans should send a message and not show up to the rink. And you know, really, of all people to be saying that, it shouldn't be me, because I make a living off
the
NHL.
That's a significant source of your income.
Yeah, so It's interesting for me, because on one hand, I'm losing money left hand and, you know, I'm
left, right, and center. Yeah,
you know what I mean. I'm losing money all over the place. But at the other, in the other palm of my hand, I'm like still burnt out or still disappointed or mad or upset about Game 7 with the Vancouver Canucks 2 years ago in the NHL Stanley Cup Finals. And for that reason alone, I've never been able to get back into hockey.
That is going to be a bad taste in the mouth of all Canucks fans until they bring the silverware home.
Quickly, how about the presidential, U.S. presidential debate last night, James?
It was a very interesting watch. A lot of people say that Romney won the debate, but I would disagree. I'd have to say that Obama held his own.
Oh.
I found it very interesting that there was a lot of mention and a lot of talk of clean coal energy, but there was not one mention made of climate change.
Interesting. I never actually saw the debate from beginning to end, but that's partly because I'm against the whole idea of these televised debates. For some reason, it just spews fakeness to me.
I think people, the majority of people, they watch these things because they want to see these guys maybe slip up or falter or say something wrong.
And is the debate about what they're saying or how they're coming across saying it? Because the average person watching the debate, to me, is not listening to what they're saying. It's how good do they look as they say it? How polite are they?
Exactly.
How cool are they, maybe?
How is his delivery? Exactly.
It's not about the substance that they're putting out there, in my opinion. A lot of these people commenting on Twitter and Facebook, that's what they're going for, is how are these people portraying themselves as a person, not necessarily a politician.
Yeah. Well, it's also a way, I guess, for the voting public to, I don't know, choose who they think the better person is.
Interesting. You know what's even more interesting?
Our show tonight?
Well, I was going to say the business of the business, and you know what we do every week. We catch everyone up with the post-to-post report.
Catching you up with the business of the business. It's time for the post-to-post report.
All right, we start the post-to-post report this week with WWE issuing a press release this morning regarding the success of their new TV series, WWE Main Event. Now, making a tongue-in-cheek comparison with the Obama versus Romney debate last night, WWE did announce that at 8 p.m. yesterday, premiering with CM Punk versus Sheamus as their first match, Main Event, it was the number four program in the time period among men aged 18 to 34, number four among men aged 18 to 49, and number five among men aged 25 to 54. Now, in addition, WWE Main Event out-delivered the last game of the MLB regular season on ESPN and ESPN2 among all key men and adult demos. WWE also finished ahead of most female cable networks. Vince McMahon said in the release that he expects fans will make the WWE Main Event the number one show on the network, ION Television Network, that is.
That's right.
As they have done for WWE programs with all of their other TV partners. Pretty successful launch for their new program, James.
Now, one thing I don't understand is all these different rating systems that they use to
no
gauge how
does.
Successful a TV
no
show
one
is.
Does.
I mean, you've got 18 to 34, and then you got 18 to 49, then you got 25 to 54. Why don't you just have one rating, 18 to 54, men age 18? I don't know, you know?
Because, James, because.
Anyways, THQ announced Wednesday that 21 downloadable characters will be available for purchase on the new WWE 13 video game. With a scheduled release for October 30th, THQ will be offering a $20 package where you receive all the characters as well as Diamond Dallas Page and Goldust, which will be exclusive to this download package. Now, other notable names announced for the game will include Antonio Cesaro, Damian Sandow, Brian Pillman, Gangrel, and hey, our personal favorite, Mike Tyson.
So let me get this straight. I go to the store, I pay $69.99 for a video game, I come home, I go on their online store and pay another $20 to get all the characters.
No, it's just...
No, that's what it is.
I don't know what it is. I don't even know what to say about that. It's just money grab.
Are you paying $20 to get all the characters, or are you one of those guys that would rather excel through the game, through the career mode, and gain the characters individually as you become more successful? What would you prefer?
But then I can't get Diamond Dallas Page and Goldust.
Interesting.
You don't want to pay $20 for Diamond Dallas Page and Goldust?
I guess we're going to find out how many idiots are actually out there in this world, aren't we?
And to answer your question, no, I would not go online and pay $20.
Now, rapper Machine Gun Kelly. Remember him, James?
Oh, yes.
And I use the word rapper gently. Well, he spoke with Cave Magazine recently and revealed details regarding his role at WrestleMania 28 in Miami, where you and I were.
Yes, we were.
MGK, as he likes to be called, revealed that he did not almost come on stage that night, as he says it was the scariest moment in his career.
Understandable.
He also revealed that his group's microphones were not working just before they went on stage, but it all worked out once they were out there. He described John Cena as being very cool and upfront, and that Cena actually gave him some moonshine before they performed live at Mania.
What?
Moonshine? Where do you even get that?
Where, yeah.
MGK said he was asked to play up not liking The Rock during the feud, but he thought The Rock was pretty much the coolest guy ever.
Well, The Rock is the coolest guy ever.
Well, as I was telling you earlier today, James, I went on The Rock's Twitter page today at work, and we were just kind of looking at it, and The Rock has almost 3.5 million followers following him on Twitter.
Jeez, that is almost ungodly.
And guess how many people The Rock is following?
Let me guess. Under 20.
Zero.
Oh, what?
I don't know how you do that, buddy.
That is...
To me, that just says, Rock, you are the coolest guy in the world.
No kidding. Holy smokes. Now, Jerry Lawler has stated in recent interviews with various outlets that he is looking at returning to the road as early as next month. Lawler, who did commentate a local independent show recently, stated that Vince McMahon and the WWE were very good about his recent medical problems, and that Vince personally told him he could take the rest of the year off if he wanted, which I personally think he should do.
Unbelievable that he's even considering coming back this soon. He's already commentated an indie show, like we had mentioned. The guy is he's doing incredibly well, but still a very scary incident that happened, and not one that should be taken lightly.
No.
If Lawler does need that extra time off, and maybe just a little bit of a holiday to relax.
Why not? I mean, the guy's on the road with the guys.
Mm-hmm.
Year after year, take your holiday.
WWE announced last Friday that they have come to terms with the release of WWE diva Kelly Kelly. Former diva now. In vintage WWE fashion, they wished her well in her endeavors. And shortly after, Kelly tweeted that she had an amazing 6 years with the WWE, made great friends, and have the most loyal and amazing fans in the world. Have exciting things in the works, and she can't wait to share them with us. It's rumored her contract was near ending, and she wasn't planning to re-sign with the company, but a calendar that was being offered for sale through her website, it might have been an issue with the higher-ups. That's just a rumor being tossed around. Apparently, from what I understand, Triple H gave Kelly a call personally saying that any sort of merchandise you sell through your website, we need to know about, and these calendar photos, they might have been a little too risque.
Which to me is, like, next to retarded, coming from the WWE, where...
Good choice of word there, James. Do you learn that in radio broadcasting?
Okay, let's move on.
TMZ.com reported Tuesday that former WWE superstar Daivari was involved in an incident on a train recently. Daivari said he saved passengers on a Minneapolis, Minnesota train last week after a fellow passenger threatened to kill everyone.
What?
Daivari said he used a rear naked chokehold, which is, of course, a famous wrestling move, to take the man down who was uttering threats as the train was heading to a local airport. Now, Daivari claims the police were taking far too long, so he took the man down, and he held him down with a body scissors before dumping him right off the train.
What?
Police are investigating.
Holy smokes.
Isn't that the dream of every kid growing up, that you stop a robbery using a wrestling move?
Well, every kid into wrestling, I guess.
Now, in terms of financials this week, WWE stock at $8.21 a share. Not going to go into detail about that this week. Nothing new to report. But in terms of television ratings,
yes,
WWE Raw on Monday, October 1st, scored a year-low 2.54 rating for all 3 hours, which is actually down 7% from a near-low 2.72 last week.
I had a feeling they'd do a lower number this week.
And I'm sure we'll get to that. The standard two-hour rating was actually lower at a 2.53 rating. Those are the original 2 hours that we're used to back in the day.
Right.
Raw averaged 3.50 million viewers, which was down 285,000 viewers compared to last week. Now, Monday Night Raw, it did rank number 3 behind Monday Night Football. And no surprise there, as it was the Dallas Cowboys versus the Chicago Bears.
Big game. Big, big game.
But it was also behind Major Crimes, which is a television show on TNT.
Huh.
Now, in all key male demographics, Raw did rank number 2 behind Monday Night Football. Now, here's a question. You think we'll see that on a WWE Did You Know graphic next Monday on Raw?
Probably not anytime soon.
So that's the post-to-post report this week. Hoping you're caught up on the business of the business. Now, I got to ask you, James, the ratings definitely tell the story this week for Monday Night Raw. Down significantly. In fact, their lowest for the year.
Well, I think a large part of it, of course, is like the football game we were just mentioning. I think another part of it is probably the absence of John Cena on the television.
Interesting. I personally loved the absence of John Cena.
I know you did, but probably a lot of the kids that watch WWE don't.
Do you think that actually has something to do with it? Or do you think that people just pick up initially that it is a standstill show, nothing is really progressing on Monday Night Raw, and for that reason alone, they start to turn the channel?
I think that's probably a part of it, yeah.
Yeah?
It's probably a part of it. Combined with the Cena absence in the football game, that's probably why we're seeing really low ratings here.
Interesting. Well, we're going to get into it a little further in our tail of the tape, but James, we don't want to waste any time because we do have a very special guest waiting to talk to us tonight. A present WWE superstar, and this guy, he's something else, isn't he?
He's a broski, that's for sure.
We are joined now by WWE superstar and former United States champion, and the man who actually coined my girlfriend's favorite phrase in professional wrestling. What is that one again, James?
Woo, woo, woo.
We welcome to the show Zack Ryder. Zack, thanks for coming on. How you doing today, man?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Oh, not too bad. So, Smack Talk Radio Live is broadcast out of Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Have you ever been to Vancouver before? And if so, do you have a favorite story about it?
If I have, I don't remember. We go all over the place, all year round. It's hard to keep track, you know, because we're just seeing the airports and the hotels and the arenas. So If I was there, the only thing I saw was the airport, the hotel, or the arena.
Fair enough. I think that's pretty much the standard response every time I ask that question. Now, Zack Ryder, you know, when most people think of the beginning of Zack Ryder's wrestling career, I mean, for myself, and I was dead wrong when I originally thought this. I originally thought that, you know, Zack Ryder started at the time when you were wearing the one pant leg with your wrestling tights, back in, what, late 2010?
Very innovative. I like that.
But the truth is...
That was 2009.
The truth is, though, is that's not the beginning of your wrestling career. You've been at this for quite a while. Even before signing with the WWE, just for the people on the West Coast here who haven't been able to follow your wrestling career, could you give me just a quick background on how you got into this whole thing?
And I guess long story short, I've been a diehard WWE fan my entire life. It's the only thing I ever wanted to do. Ever since I was a little kid, I knew one day I'm going to be in the WWE. It's something I just never grew out of. And right after high school, I found a wrestling school in Long Island, New York. And that was 2003. And 3 years later, I signed my WWE contract. So in May 2006, I moved down to Georgia for Deep South Wrestling, which was the WWE developmental school at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was there for about a year. And in May 2007, myself, along with Curt Hawkins, debuted on the ECW brand as Brett and Brian, the Major Brothers. Mm-hmm. And later on became the Edge Hedge, switched our names, Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder. And I guess the rest is kind of history.
Now, you were a tag team with Curt Hawkins, like you had mentioned. Are you guys actually best friends backstage?
I mean, we are tight. We are as close to brothers as it gets. You know, we started our careers together in 2003. You know, we got signed together. At one point, we saw each other 7 days a week, you know, because, you know, we were on the road, traveling together, rooming together, and then at home, we'd be living together. So, I mean, for a good part of my life, he was definitely, you know, my brother for sure. Mm-hmm.
Now, after you two broke up as a tag team, I hate to use the word breakup, but after you guys split apart, you know, things have really been a bit of a roller coaster ride for yourself. There have been ups and there have been downs. How have you described your career so? Or how would you describe your career so far in the WWE?
I mean, that's definitely a roller coaster. You know, when we broke up, as you said, in 2009, we were both kind of stuck. Like, what are we going to do now? We were just, like I said, we were the Edge Heads, and then, you know, Edge went away. He was injured, so now we were just two guys who looked like Edge, you know. Nobody really knew who Zack Ryder was. Nobody knew who Curt Hawkins was. And I think the breakup was the best thing that happened to me. The best thing that happened to him as well was our chance to shine, be ourselves. And, you know, I was never really comfortable in my own skin when I was a Major Brother or an Edge Head. And when we got split up in that draft in 2009, I knew it was my chance to be me, to be something different. And that's, you know, that's when I started wearing the one-legged tights. It was just to get attention, because I needed to be as different from Curt Hawkins, as different from Edge, and as different from everybody else as possible. And that's when I just started being myself, just a bro from Long Island. And it took a while for people to catch on and for people to notice. But when I started that YouTube show in 2011, you know, the Ryder Revolution took over WWE.
Before I ask about the YouTube show, I have to ask: was it you that was the, or was it you that decided to cut your hair short, or was it someone else that told you to cut the hair short?
That was me. I was I was pitching and asking for months before. I hated the long hair. It wasn't me. I wasn't. I'm not a rock star. I wasn't. You know, that's Edge's deal. That's Hawkins' deal. It was not me, and it did not look cool for me. You know, it looked good as well. When I was wrestling, it looked good, and I came out of the style, it looked good. Otherwise, it looked horrible. I had to wear it in, like, a ponytail when it went out, and it was horrible. Like, the girls on Long Island do not dig guys with ponytails.
Very wise decision.
Yeah, no kidding. How hard is it to actually pitch these ideas to the powers that be in the WWE? I mean, did you have a sense of frustration of trying to get this idea across of who Zack Ryder really is and where you wanted to go with it, or were they very accepting of your ideas?
In the time I've been in WWE, I've pitched hundreds of ideas, and maybe three of them have went through, but those, you know, two or three have been the things that have, like, changed my career, so I can't really complain, you know, like, Kurt Austin and I becoming Edgeheads, that was our idea, that we pitched to the WWE, we pitched to Edge, and if it wasn't for Edge saying, yeah, this is great, he gave it the green light, so if Edge didn't like it, it wasn't going to happen, but that's one, and the second one was this Long Island IZ, the woo-woo-woo, and luckily, you know, They let me try it. You know, ECW was the brand at the time. You know, it was the third brand. It's kind of like the stepchild of the WWE, and they were just letting things happen, and they let me, you know, develop myself and prove myself, and, you know, I needed ECW. If I was on Raw, you know, and in the first week it didn't stick, that could have been it, you know, but luckily on ECW, I was able to grow and develop the Long Island IZ character.
Let's talk about the YouTube show, True Long Island Story. How did that, I mean, for the people who have never seen it before, give us a quick background on what that show is all about.
Well, I mean, what it is now and what it is when it started are two totally different things. Right now, as we speak on the phone, I just finished episode 87. So, wow. You know, when I started the show in February 2011, I got to a point where I was sick and tired of my spot in WWE. I was sick of being a nobody. I was sick of, you know, I'd be on the road with my buddies. You know, we'd be at a restaurant. And someone, hey, can I have an autograph? My buddies would pull out their 8x10 promotional photos, you know, and I'd have to sign a napkin because I wasn't a big enough star to even get a promotional 8x10.
Oh,
you know, I didn't have an action figure. I didn't have TV time. I didn't have anything. And the pitching of the ideas, it wasn't working. So I had to take, you know, my career into my own hands. And that's when I started the True Long Island Story, which, if you watch the first ever episode, it's just me sitting in front of my living room wall talking and trying to be funny and doing stupid skits. Eventually it became, you know, more drawn-out skits and introducing my dad and my real-life friend and me taking shots at WWE. And it was a snowball effect. And it really just took off. And now I have to do the show because it got so successful that WWE took it, got a YouTube deal, got a YouTube channel, and put my show on their channel. So now, you know, I'm just making episodes every week because, you know, it's part of my job now.
I mean, you could argue that doing something outside the elements of what the WWE may tell you to do, that's the best way I could describe it, can be a bit of a risky venture for WWE superstars. You know, that has backfired in certain times with certain wrestlers. So this was a bit of a risky venture at the time you started the show. Were you concerned at all that you were going to get in trouble and possibly released over this?
Absolutely not. The goal when I started the show was to either get noticed or get fired. Hmm. One or the other was going to happen.
And what would you have done if they had got rid of you?
No idea.
And you weren't thinking like
right
that.
Now, if they call on the other line, WWE firing me, I still don't know what I'm going to do.
Hmm.
You know, I can't think like that. I can't have a backup plan. I mean, it's probably the smartest idea, but my whole life I never had a backup plan. You know, I went to school. I went to college for a couple of years. In class, it was a joke. I was just drawing my wrestling designs to think of what moves I was going to practice later on at night. You know, I never had a backup plan. It was always 100% WWE, 100% WWE. And that's what it is now, 100% become WWE champion.
Well, your risk definitely paid off because the WWE did notice, along with the fans, this YouTube show that you had started. Can you describe to James and I the moment when the WWE recognize that your show was taking off, that Zack Ryder was becoming a somebody, and just when was that initial confrontation with you and Vince, or you and or someone in the WWE, where they came to you and said, look, we really like what you're doing?
Well, you know, no one ever really came up to me for a while and said, hey, we like what you're doing. No one really told me to stop. Nobody told me to continue. I was so under the radar that they didn't really know I was doing it. And if they did, they didn't care enough to watch it. And if they did watch it, they weren't telling me they were watching it because I was getting no feedback.
Hmm.
So I just continued doing what I was doing. And, you know, I wasn't on TV, and there'd be Zack Ryder signs. I wasn't at these shows, and they'd chant, "We want Ryder." It was crazy. And to deny that was like a career making like time for me. It's you can't deny it. That's what made my career. These fans bringing the signs, chanting my name, demanding Zack Ryder, and eventually, whether WWE wanted to admit it or not, they had to give me a chance. They had to put me on TV, and they just had to do it. Hmm. And actually, that was probably about summertime of 2011. That's when I think things started to switch around, when I started getting on TV a little more, when they started making merchandise for Zack Ryder. You know, they made me a T-shirt, you know, and I wasn't even on Raw.
Yeah.
Unheard of.
I would argue, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, but I would argue that 2011 was the year of Zack Ryder. I mean, it may not be the only year, but as of right now, I would say that is your best year to date. You get this storyline with John Cena. I mean, you're in vignettes with John Cena. I mean, right then and there, that says that you are somebody and they are recognizing you. You get pushed, you win the U.S. title and you're eventually pushed into a storyline with Cena and Kane. How did that, what are you feeling at that time? I mean, it was a major storyline on television though at that time. Were you excited at the time? Were you pitching ideas? Were you a little nervous? How did that whole thing come about?
Yeah, like you said, there's no denying 2011 was my year. I started as nothing and ended as the United States champion. Mm-hmm. You know, 2012 and hasn't really been the year exactly. I mean, I got pushed right off the stage in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's that. You know,
okay, well, let me flip it around here for you, Zach. Some people, not myself, but some people would argue that storyline with you, John Cena, Kane, and Eve kind of put a roadblock on your momentum, and things have worked against you.
A roadblock is the highest roadblock possible.
I agree. I agree.
I 100% agree.
But
I'm not going to sit here and complain about it. And
no.
You know, because complaining about it and crying about it is not going to do anything. What I need to do is figure out a way to repeat the momentum of 2011 and top the momentum of 2011. Will it happen? I have no idea, but I'm definitely going to try.
That's pretty inspirational right there.
Were you happy with the way that whole angle with Cena and Kane and you and Eve played out in the end?
I mean, let's just say this. For months of my life, I was walking around and getting wheeled around in a back and neck brace. And my WrestleMania moment ended with me getting kicked in the bro nuts. So let's just say that.
Okay.
But I would also argue on the plus side, you got to kiss Eve Torres. So really, it weighs itself
up.
I did
kiss Eve Torres, almost and out, right? I had a WrestleMania match. So.
Yeah, and how was WrestleMania 28 for you when you were involved with Team Teddy versus Team Long? Was that a great experience for yourself?
I mean, it's WrestleMania. There's no bigger. And don't ever get taken away from me. I made it to WrestleMania. You know, you open that program, you know, that souvenir program, you know, my picture's there. I'm with the match. The back of the T-shirt, I'm on there. You know, it says Zack Ryder. Zack Ryder was on WrestleMania. That can never get erased.
That's a huge accolade.
So that's amazing. I love it.
Exactly. Yeah. Based off talking to you for the last couple minutes, I've realized that you are a very positive thinking guy. There's no, you're not going to take no for an answer. I got to ask though, Zach, are you at all frustrated in any way? I mean, even if you are, you're probably not going to admit it, but is there any frustration with where you are currently and just with your lack of television time? Because I know, for example, when the Monday Night Raw came to Long Island, you were not featured on television, and James and I were sitting there shocked that
blew
you were
my
not
mind.
There.
Absolutely blew my mind.
And I got to ask, I mean, just doing my job, is there any sort of sense of frustration with you right now?
I mean, absolutely, but I think, you know, with every superstar, not just me, you know, you can never be satisfied with your position. You can never be satisfied where you're on the card. If you get in this business, you want to be, or you should want to be, at the top, and I'm not at the top yet, and so I'm going to be frustrated until I'm there, and when I'm there, I'm probably going to get even better, so I'll be frustrated then, you know, but that's how it works, and that's how you get better, that's how you become the best.
You talk about changing it up, doing something again to make yourself noticed. Do you have something in mind? Is there something that you can share with us as to what the plan for the future is with Zack Ryder?
I'll be honest with you. I do not know what the plan is. I do not know what the next thing is. You know, I use social media. You know, I was one of the first people to use it and use it, you know, to my advantage. You know, I'm not saying I didn't create social media. It was there. You know, it was there for everyone to use. Mm-hmm. And people were using it. You know, I wasn't the first one to use it, but I was the first one to take advantage of it the best possible way. You know, I'm 27. My friends, they really use Twitter. My friends really use Facebook. So I was just using it as Zach Ryder and trying to reach out to not just my you know, 10 friends, but to the millions of WWE fans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that worked. Now I need to find something else. What is that next thing? I don't have a clue, but I'm going to try to figure it out.
Fair enough. I want to ask you about social media because Sports Illustrated did list you as one of the 100 most influential social media users in sport. It is no secret that you are on Twitter a lot and Facebook. I wanted to ask you just how essential is social media to wrestlers today?
I mean, I think now you got to be on it. You know, like, why wouldn't you be on it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's just an extra way to promote yourself, an extra voice.
And free advertising instance, as well.
It can be a double-edged sword. Though.
Yeah. There's just no reason not to. I mean, tell me a reason why, and then, okay, we'll have a discussion. But there's no reason. I don't think there's a reason to not be on it. It's only beneficial, in my opinion. And I'm not saying I'm 100%, right? But that's definitely how I feel.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Okay, let's talk about Hell in a Cell. That's coming up on October 28th from the Phillips Arena in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, currently, Zach, you are in a tag team tournament with Santino. You guys are tag team partners. You just beat Tyson Kidd and Curt Hawkins. Your next opponents are the Rhodes Scholars. How you feeling about that? And, you know, we want to see you in the spotlight at the pay-per-view. So, your thoughts on the tag team title? The tag team tournament so far.
We actually beat Tyson Kidd and Justin Gabriel, but
sorry about that.
That's okay. It's actually funny because I was last night on the new show main event. We were actually the main event of main event, which is pretty sick. But yeah, you know, the tag team titles, you know, Hell in the Cell. If Santino and I make it all the way, that'd be great. I'm sure a lot of people don't think we're going to, but I think we can. You know, he's a former United States champion. I'm a former United States champion. He's a former Intercontinental champion. We're both former tag team champions. You know, we have the experience. So I definitely think we have a shot, you know, to go all the way to Hell in a Cell.
Now, I got to ask, is Hell in a Cell one of those pay-per-views where the guys in the back are okay being left off the show if they're not booked? Because that looks pretty mean.
Menacing. Yeah,
I'm guessing that you're pretty sore the next day. Have you yourself ever wanted to be in a Hell in a Cell match?
Yeah, of course I want to be in a Hell in a Cell, and of course I'm bummed out that I'm not going to be in an actual Hell in a Cell match.
Yeah.
So hopefully next year or the year after that. I mean, you know, my career, all these goals and a list of goals and things I want to accomplish, and being a Hell in a Cell match, of course I want to do that. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, Zach, I mean, I don't have anything else for you. James, you got anything else?
No, that pretty much covers it, I think.
All right. Zach Ryder, thanks a lot for coming on the show. And if you want to check out Zach Ryder on Twitter, you can do so at Zach Ryder. And, of course, his YouTube show, Z, True Long Island Story. That's hard to say. But regardless, check it out on YouTube. Zach, thanks a lot for coming on. Really appreciate it, man.
No problem, bro.
So there you have it, James. Zach Ryder, a class act, and really staying positive through a time when the stars really aren't shining so brightly as they once did.
No, that's definitely for sure. And I mean, yeah, that was the one thing I really noticed about him. Very positive, very upbeat individual. I mean, the guy is talented. He was ranked number 70 on this year's PWI top 500 list, so that's got to say something.
And he's definitely got a look for wrestling as well. I mean, the guy looks like a wrestler.
Yes.
And that time in the spotlight in 2011, it really did... people started to take notice. I mean, you can't forget the We Want Ryder chants.
Oh, that was amazing.
Or the signs in the crowd that said Ryder or Riot.
Or woo, 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 the huge signs in the background.
At that time, he was really at the top of the wrestling world. Now, granted, he didn't main event a WrestleMania or anything like that, but Zack Ryder definitely showed that he can hang with the big boys. And to me, that's part of the reason why they probably put him in a program with John Cena at the time, because even John Cena was starting to take notice of him. And no one can deny these chants that the crowd were giving him. Definitely a talented individual. And in my opinion, the best is yet to come with Zack Ryder.
And you got to really give him props because he really took his career into his own hands and got himself over as opposed to relying on the creative team to come up with something for him. So that's really innovative, something that really hasn't been done before. And like we were talking about in the interview with the advent of social media and stuff, he really took off with it.
Well, it's a very risky venture to go and chart your own territory without approval by the WWE. We have seen countless WWE superstars make that mistake. You know, even take the post-to-post report earlier
Kelly
tonight.
Kelly.
Exactly. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but there are definitely instances of people who try and take fate into their own hand and it backfires on them. But this was a gamble and it paid off. And like Zach said, if he needed to make a decision because you can't spend your whole life aiming for a goal if it's not looking like it's going to happen.
Exactly. If you're going to shoot for the stars,
you got to take risks.
And,
but you also got to have you got to be prepared to face the consequences as well. And without question, Zach definitely was. But if there's one thing that I give Zack Ryder credit for, it's the fact that he's done everything he's supposed to. He stayed in excellent shape physically. He's not terrible on the mic. He's really good on the mic, I find. My only criticism about Zack Ryder would be that sometimes he comes off as that Cena esque type where he's a little over the top. Now, that doesn't work for me, but it definitely works for the younger generation, as we see with John Cena. So I'm not going to hold that against him. Just for me personally, it's a little harder for me to relate and get behind this guy when I see that.
I hear what you're saying.
Understand?
No, I totally hear what you're saying.
All right, well, once again, thank you to Zack Ryder. Really appreciate the interview. Excellent guy, and we'll hope to talk to him again. Now, James, a big week on Monday Night Raw, on Monday Night Raw this week. Or was it, really? I mean, overall thoughts. Before I get your thoughts on Monday Night Raw, let's officially kick off the segment that we like to call Tail the Tape.
It's time for the Tale of the Tape.
Wait for it. Wait for it. Okay, now let's get your opinions on Monday Night Raw this week.
Well, it wasn't as good as last week's Raw, that's for sure. I mean, they didn't have anything that was as exciting and as captivating as that Mick Foley segment was last week. I don't know. To me, it kind of felt like they were just in a holding pattern, so to speak. And it was, honestly, it was kind of really hard to get through the 3 hours this week. It really dragged.
I believe there's 6 weeks in between the last pay-per-view and the upcoming pay-per-view, which is Hell in a Cell, which happens October 28th. You do need to write in those 6 weeks.
Yes, you do.
And you can debate whether this show progressed any storylines or really was just a week-long fill episode to get by to the next week. Would you agree?
Yeah, I'd probably say.
I feel like nothing happened this week. That really got me. There was no cliffhanger at the end.
No.
Raw ended with Daniel Bryan and Kane yelling at each other, saying, "I am the tag team champions."
Yeah, I was really surprised. I was like almost expecting another segment after that, but no. Mm-hmm. It was all of a sudden the signature came up, and Michael Cole's telling everybody to have a good night. So yeah, that kind of threw me off a little bit.
In terms of what we were left with last week, Ryback, you know, he had all the momentum going into this past Monday, and it's debatable whether that momentum continued. In fact, I argue it might have gone the opposite way. But to start Monday Night Raw off, James, there was, you know, our opening segment, and it involved, again, Paul Heyman and CM Punk.
That's right.
And Paul Heyman, to me, is just unbelievable with what he's managed to come up with on the microphone since his return. And ever since he's joined up with CM Punk, let me ask you this. Ever since he's joined up with CM Punk, would you say he's been... let me rephrase that, sorry.
Yeah.
He left Brock Lesnar.
That's right.
Went to CM Punk. Did you think he was better with Brock Lesnar, or do you think he was better with CM Punk now in terms of being on the microphone?
I think probably he was a little bit better when he was with Brock Lesnar, just merely for the fact that he probably got to speak a little bit more. Because, I mean, we all know that CM Punk is very good on the mic and he's very well-spoken, and Brock Lesnar really is not. We all know that his mic skills aren't really his strong suit. So probably I'd have to say, yeah, definitely when he was with Brock Lesnar, just for the fact probably because he got to speak a little bit more.
Right? Well, I'm actually going to go the opposite way because I find that you have Paul Heyman, who's excellent on the mic. And like you said, Brock Lesnar isn't the best on the mic. So maybe he doesn't bring out the best in Paul Heyman. But when you have Paul Heyman with another guy that could be argued the best on the mic in today's generation of wrestlers, those two are a magical combination.
Very much so.
And an idea was thrown out this Monday on Raw, and when I saw it, I thought, beautiful, run with it. And that was what Paul Heyman requested or what he thinks would be best for the WWE.
From the WWE Board of Directors, and it says, and I'm quoting this verbatim, AJ Lee's actions have been inappropriate and sometimes juvenile, and she is not to put her hands on any superstar, manager, or anyone else ever again. Now, what that means, ladies and gentlemen, is that the WWE champion CM Punk and I concur with these other opinions that AJ Lee must now be removed by the board of directors as the general manager of Monday Night Raw, effective immediately. No, I know why you're booing. You're booing because you know that leaves a huge power void here on Raw. Who would lead the flagship show for WWE? And the answer to that question is me.
Now, how good of an idea would that be, James? Put Paul Heyman as the general manager of Monday Night Raw.
That would be a good idea, but you know what? To be honest with you, I am so sick with this whole revolving door general manager position.
Oh, I would definitely agree.
Like, just get somebody and put them in the position and hold them there. I mean, like, do we even need a general manager? Do we really need to have this authority figure to kick off the drama and to you know, to have the inciting incident and to get the opening segment? Do we really need that authority figure?
I brought this up before in the past. You know, it would be trying something completely different by having no general manager. That being said, it would probably create chaos as opposed to who just is in charge. But you can use that to your advantage. And maybe this is a situation where you could do that all over again. You could have AJ on the outs, Paul Heyman on the fringe as opposed to getting in and becoming the general manager.
Yeah.
In that transition, you can have this chaos and you can really, you can fill a couple shows, terms of, you know, a few weeks of shows of deciding who is the GM and who the, and just how chaotic it can get, if you know what I, if,
yeah, no, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Sorry about that. But what I'm trying to say is you can feed off this chaos that would ensue by having no general manager. And I guess the bigger question here is, because everyone agrees Paul Heyman would make a good general manager.
He would be fantastic because, yeah. You need that. I personally think you need a strong heel character in the authority position.
But my bigger question would be, should AJ already be ousted as the general manager?
You know what? Personally, I'm really starting to get sick of AJ. You know, she was the hottest thing going in wrestling just a few months ago, but really ever since she's become the general manager, I just personally feel like her stock has dropped because really, how has she been different from any other general manager? I mean, that was what was exciting when she initially got the position of authority was that, yeah, maybe this will be a little bit different, but it hasn't. It's been the exact same, okay, we'll have our opening segment, okay, I'm going to set up the most obvious match in the world for the main event, and it's just formulaic week after week. You know,
well,
I mean?
If you could go back and redo AJ, in the introduction of AJ becoming the general manager, and maybe you could, if you could go back and rewrite that first week where she was the new manager, like, what would you have done differently?
To be honest with you, I can't really remember back that first week when she was general manager.
It was that good. But my point is, like, my point is that there's only you're in a limited role as a general manager, and I don't know if it's her. Maybe if you threw Paul Heyman in there as well, we would even start to say the same about him. The point is maybe the general manager role has been done too many times by too many people that it's just not working with AJ. And because I don't really blame AJ in this situation, because I still find her to be very good on TV in terms of her facial expressions. Her acting is very good. She can wrestle. She can't referee a match, as we found out.
Boy.
But, you know, she's still not bad. And I find the part that's boring me about her is the stuff that creative is giving her. I mean, she's coming up with these terrible matches that are supposed to be spectacular main events,
so
and they're really
obvious.
Not spectacular to me.
Obvious.
And you know, she tries to get back at CM Punk by booking him in a tag team match. Big deal. You know,
yeah, exactly.
But that's not AJ's fault personally. That's the hand she's being dealt. And that's, to me, the bigger question is, do we need a Raw general manager? If you do, I definitely agree. It's got to be Paul Heyman.
Yeah. I personally would love to see Paul Heyman as the general manager. I think we'd see some exciting stuff. But I don't know. I don't think they're going to go that way. I think they're going to stick with AJ personally. But I don't know.
What about his right-hand man, CM Punk? He had another big night on Monday night this week, confronting Jim Ross on Jim Ross Appreciation Night, as Raw was in Oklahoma this week. We've already talked about it. Does CM Punk deserve to be called the best in the world? In our both of our eyes, I would think at this point we're saying yes. But according to Jim Ross, as we heard off the top, he needs to win the big one. Do you have a problem with what Jim Ross is saying there, James?
Well, it doesn't matter that you've already beat John Cena three times. You know, now you've got to beat him in a Hell in a Cell to be the best in the world. I don't know. It doesn't really. You know where I'm coming from. It doesn't really make sense to me. He's already beat the guy three times.
And the other problem I have with this is, let's just say John Cena recovers from his injury and actually does come back and face Punk at Hell in a Cell. Let's say CM Punk beats Cena at Hell in a Cell. Well, what's the cop out there? Cena was injured. We didn't get 100% John Cena, so we're going to have another match. And John Cena's going to have to, or sorry, CM Punk's going to have to prove himself all over again. There's a cop out there. So to me, this is kind of like a throwaway match because...
Yeah, I never thought about that, actually.
If Punk wins, Cena's got an excuse.
Yeah, I never thought about that.
And really, Cena is going to be coming off an injury, stepping into a Hell in a Cell, which is supposed to be one of the most physically demanding matches. Are we going to get that out of a recently recovered Cena?
Who knows? Maybe they'll work a lighter style.
How can you do that, though?
But yeah, how can you... Exactly. I just thought about what I said. How can you work a lighter style in a Hell in a Cell match? It just... It doesn't work.
It's got disaster in my eyes written all over it, because no matter what, I have a feeling that I won't be thrilled with the outcome. Typically, that's what happens after a pay-per-view when I watch it. But... This time I can see it coming from a mile away.
I won't touch that.
No, you know what I mean, though? But this time I can see it coming from a mile away. Now, if it's not going to be John Cena, Monday Night has teased to the fans that there is an alternative in case John Cena isn't ready. And that man would be Ryback.
Yeah, that's interesting the way they progressed it this week. Instead of having a stare down backstage, now they have a stare down in the middle of the ring. So.
Again, really not progressing anything. We basically continued the stare down from backstage last week to this week in the ring.
And it follows the theme of the standalone Raw this past Monday. But personally, I don't think we're going to see any kind of program between Ryback and CM Punk anytime soon, because how do you have a program with Ryback and CM Punk without Ryback going over? You know what I mean? Like, any, I don't think they really want to have the title on him at this time.
Well, here's why the WWE wins in this situation. You have a backup plan with Ryback in case John Cena isn't recovered from his injury in time for Hell in a Cell. Now, if Cena is, he obviously is going to be slotted in and Ryback sitting on the sideline. However, the plus to all of this is we're talking about Ryback. We're giving him credibility. Just you and I sitting here discussing him, his name out there, is giving him exposure. So even if Ryback never even faces CM Punk, he's been made as an established character, and that's probably all they're going for here.
Do you know what the rumors are that I've heard regarding Ryback? And tell me what you think of this. I've been hearing rumors that they're planning for a Ryback-Undertaker match at WrestleMania, and where the stipulation would be streak versus streak.
I personally... would love to see Ryback versus Goldberg at WrestleMania.
Ryback
just
versus
as a gimmick
Goldberg.
Match. Bring Goldberg in for one that match would, and have Ryback versus Goldberg.
That would actually, I think, sell huge.
Well, what about Hell in a Cell? Can Ryback sell a main event of the upcoming pay-per-view?
See, that's putting a lot of faith into a guy that's maybe not ready for it yet, as was evidenced by this week on Monday Night Raw.
What did you think of Monday? Ryback, and you know, he comes out and he faces Tensai.
Yeah.
And then he obviously has another role later on in the evening with CM Punk. But just in terms of him and Tensai, you gotta wonder, is this the right time for Ryback?
Yeah, you know, you and I have had differing opinions. Personally, when I go back and I watch that match between him and Tensai, I think that Tensai was sandbagging him and making it purposefully difficult for Ryback to lift him up. Yeah. For what purpose? I don't know. Maybe to embarrass him on live television?
Well, let's set this up properly. Tensai is you know, he
Yes, sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself.
He takes a bump. He does a 360. Ryback basically is about to set him up for his finisher.
That's right, where he picks him up and he does that, basically the walking around Samoan drop, right?
And he can't pick Tensai up. He tries once to pick him up, put him on his shoulders. He can't do it. He tries a second time.
Can't do it again.
Can't do it again. Ends up clotheslining Tensai for the 1-2-3. Not able to pull off his finisher on Tensai. Now, typically, would I care about this? No. Because up until now, all the matches with Ryback have kind of been throwaway matches. I hate to use that word, but it's somewhat true.
Yeah.
But tonight was, or sorry, Monday night was specifically different because he had a larger role later that night with CM Punk. This was the setting up for the tease when Ryback confronts CM Punk,
yes,
later on in the ring when he saves Jim Ross. So to have earlier in the night Ryback attempt his finishing move and look incredibly weak, that to me killed all momentum.
It took a big blow of the wind out of his sails, that's for sure.
Now, you were saying that you think Tensai was the one that kind of stuck it to Ryback.
Of course, yeah, this is just all my theory, and this is purely speculation, but I think there's probably... I'm speculating that there's a bigger story behind this whole thing, and I think Tensai made it intentionally difficult for him to lift him up onto his shoulders. Because let's face it, he did it the previous week on SmackDown, no problem. He picked him up, put it on his shoulders, did the move.
We've seen him pick up two guys.
Now you're going to tell me that he's going to be gassed after a minute match and he can't pick Tensai up?
Well, I've argued that yes, he is gassed after a minute match.
I don't think so. I think Tensai was making it intentionally hard. Why? Because maybe he's, I don't know, maybe he's mad that Ryback is getting this monster push that maybe he was promised when he initially came back, but then got overshadowed by Brock Lesnar.
I am kind of opposite of you. I watched it again today, and I put it in rewind and press play and did it a couple times. And I think that maybe the first attempt that Ryback used to set him up for the finisher, Tensai didn't go with the move. You know, typically those guys will kind of...
Well, you got to jump and you got to help the guy doing the move, right?
In the second instance, though, I firmly believe that Tensai did everything he was supposed to, and Ryback just was so gassed, he did not have the strength to actually get him up on the shoulders.
Well, probably because he used up all his energy trying to lift him the first time.
Still, though, man, this is a very important night for Ryback. This makes or breaks where he goes from here. And here you have Ryback come out later and confront the WWE champion. Yet, what, an hour before that, we watched him fail miserably. To me, all momentum was gone after that.
Yeah,
and
that was...
And it killed it later in the night. And to me, it kills this whole idea that Ryback is unstoppable.
Yeah, it really hurt the mystique.
And I had said to you on Monday when we watched Raw that... You compare this to Goldberg in his heyday.
Did you ever see Goldberg miss a jackhammer?
Did you ever see Goldberg struggle once?
No.
Never. The guy was solid 100% of the time.
Yeah, no, I totally
agree
with you.
That's a huge, huge blow, in my opinion, to Ryback's momentum. And it'll be interesting to see if he can recover.
Well said.
All right. Now, how about the tag team title tournament?
Yes, I'm very excited about this. I'm really glad that the WWE is starting to focus a lot more on their tag team division. Because let's face it, this tournament, this tree tournament that they're having on their programming, essentially, to determine who's going to be the number one contender for Daniel Bryan and Kane, this is something that would have been unheard of like a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I think it's great. And plus, it gives a lot of these guys who maybe are languishing in the mid-card or in the lower card, now it gives them something structured to do. Because
yeah,
now they're in a tag. You know, do you kind of get what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Here?
And now with the 3-hour Raw, you also have more time
That's
for
right.
more matches. So really, it's a great time to bring back the tag division. A lot of talent are getting exposure. It's a win-win for everyone because a lot of the fans miss the tag team division. And the WWE is capitalizing off it. Again, I hate the look of the tag team titles. I think you got to change those.
That has to change.
But I do like the tag teams that are in this tag team tournament.
Yes.
Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara, they've been together. For the first time, we saw Sin Cara look different. He was actually wearing a matching ring attire, the same as Rey Mysterio. You know, obviously different masks and outfits, but the same colors. It was interesting to see those
it
two.
It was really cool. And that's where you kind of realize that, yeah, hey, they actually are taking these tag teams seriously now that the guys are starting to wear matching gear, as opposed to like a year ago where it'd just be like, you'd throw Guy X and Guy Y together and they'd be Guy X and Y. And they'd go out there and they'd wrestle a tag match. I don't know. What do you think? You think Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara should maybe come up with a name for their team?
Like, well,
the Mucho Libres or something? I don't know.
It'll be interesting to see where they go with that. I ultimately believe that they put Sin Cara with Rey Mysterio because he needed that mentorship. Sin Cara was not at the top of his game.
No.
And he hasn't delivered his best since arriving in the WWE. So this is probably a smart move to pair him up with another.
And he's getting a little bit of a rub off, right?
Of course. And what's even better about that is you could ultimately line these two up to turn on each other and face off at WrestleMania.
And that would be a huge match.
Because really, since Sin Cara has joined the WWE, it's the match everyone's wanted to see. So you tease them for a while by teaming up. You eventually turn them on each other, come the road to WrestleMania. And you set up a monster program that way. So to me, I'm a huge fan of this tag team. And they're delivering. I mean, they're not terrible. They're doing good things. I mean, I think Sin Cara personally holds back a little bit. I've seen stuff on the internet from Sin Cara that's out of this world. And ever since he's got to the WWE, you haven't seen that same level of athleticism. So in my eyes, I wonder if they actually do hold Sin Cara back a little bit.
You're talking about his CMLL days, right?
Yeah, and just some
of the
stuff.
Yeah, no, as Mystical, the stuff that he did was amazing. But that you got to remember, that's a whole different style of wrestling, right?
Of course, but there are guys in the WWE that can carry that style of wrestling. Epico and Primo as a fine example.
Yes.
Tyson Kidd can carry his own weight with them.
He can make anybody look good, that guy.
And you know, regardless, though, excellent tag team that's been set up, involved in the tournament. You also have the Road Scholars, which is interesting. You had mentioned throwing X and Y together. That's kind of an instance that they did that, Cody Rhodes and Damian Sandow.
But in this instance, it works, though. You've got two characters who logically would be together instead of just throwing two guys who are languishing at the bottom of the card together, right? You know what I mean?
1 week later, have you come around on the name at all?
No, I've still not come around on the Rhodes Scholar's name.
What about Damian Sandow in general, though? I mean, I am just becoming a very big fan of this guy.
Huge fan of Damian Sandow. His match with Sheamus this week, I mean, it was the longest match on Raw by far, and it was probably his best match that he's had since coming to the WWE.
He's very good on the microphone.
He's excellent on the microphone. Mm-hmm. He's definitely got a good look, like with the slick black hair and the beard and everything. And he's got the heel character that you love to hate, which is what you want from a heel character, you know?
Yeah.
So no, I'm a very big fan of Damian Sandow, and I see huge things for this guy in the future.
How about the tag team tournament in general? You also have
you got the primetime players. Mm-hmm. You got our buddy that we just interviewed. You got Zack Ryder and Santino Marella. We talked a little bit about that.
And you have Justin Gabriel, as I made the mistake earlier.
Yes, Justin Gabriel. So, anyways.
Well, who's Justin Gabriel tag teamed up with again?
Oh, that's right. Justin Gabriel and Tyson Kidd.
Yeah, so that's an interesting tag team as well. So, who do you think takes this tournament?
Honestly, I'm probably going to go with the Road Scholars.
Road Scholars, eh?
Yeah, I'm thinking the Road Scholars are going to take it, and you're going to see Road Scholars versus Team Hell No at Hell in a Cell.
The finals of the tournament, I see primetime players versus Road Scholars. It could be either one of those two, because they are really giving a lot of exposure to primetime players as well.
I think that's the team that they really want to focus on and make the top tag team.
They've actually bounced back very well since they got rid of AW.
Yes, I will agree with you there.
Another topic I want to talk about this week, it's one of my favorites. John Cena, absent from Raw, 1 week. I liked it.
Did you like it?
I just want to leave it at that. No, no, I did like it. And it just gives this opportunity to other guys. We get the focus off John Cena for a little bit. Just take a little bit of a breather.
And you know what? The guy needs a break, to be honest with you.
I do find it crazy that the ratings drop the 1 week he goes away. You could make that comparison. I personally am not. I don't blame that. I don't think people tune into Monday Night Raw, find out John Cena's not going to be there, and turn the channel. So I don't give him that much credit.
Now, do you think he's going to be on Raw next week?
I personally think no, he shouldn't be.
You don't think that the officials are going to panic and look at these numbers from this week and go, Jesus, we got to get John Cena back on TV.
No, you make a good point. It's quite possible that they would do that. But what would you do with him? You just have him come out in an arm brace and do a promo in the ring?
Well, maybe you have, I don't know, maybe you have continued hostilities between CM Punk and, I don't know, maybe Mick Foley or maybe Jim Ross again. And then you have Cena maybe running through the crowd and come to the rescue at the end of the show or something like that. Mm. So maybe in your end segment, you know, you end off Raw with John Cena standing tall again. I don't know. Maybe something
no,
like
it's
those.
Good. I actually wouldn't mind seeing John Cena in the ring with Mick Foley and doing, you know, reciprocating a serious promo like with what Punk did with Foley and have Cena do one with Foley. That's not a bad idea either. I just personally, if you can't be 100% John, then you in my opinion, it might be best just to stay at home and give these new guys new opportunities. That being said, though, the talent roster is really hurting right now. Obviously, you have John Cena gone. You have Randy Orton off filming a movie. You still have to do these local house show tours. And CM Punk is the headliner, really, when it comes down to it. The whole company at this point is on Punk's back. So you got to take some of that strain off him. So I can see them bringing Cena back. It's not a bad idea. But for me, personally, yeah, I'm enjoying the little break from John Cena.
It definitely it puts the whole show in a different light, that's for sure, when you don't have that big star attraction there, right? The other guys have to kind of pick up their game a little bit.
Now, we talked about this earlier tonight. How about, about the presidential debate, Mitt Romney versus Barack Obama. And, you know, it's debatable as to who wins the debate or who won the debate last night. Personally, I don't care. I found another segment far more interesting, and that was the debate that went inside the square circle involving Sheamus and the Big Show. Now, when you first saw this, James, you know, you saw the two podiums in the ring. Initial thoughts, were you thinking this is going to be great, or are you thinking this is going to be disaster?
No,
written all over it.
I personally, as soon as I saw that they were going to have a presidential, or a debate, sorry, not a presidential debate, but a debate between two guys, I'm like, this just screams time filler. This just screams bathroom break.
Well, let's find out. Here's Big Show and Sheamus in their big debate on Monday Night Raw.
Do you have something serious to offer?
Actually, why don't I have a closing line here, Big Show? I want to know how it feels. How does it feel to lose the World Heavyweight Championship to Daniel Bryan in 45 seconds? Only for him to lose to me at WrestleMania in 18 seconds. And you've come out here and you've talked about how you're going to walk out the World Heavyweight Champion, how you're going to knock me out. But I want to know, how does it feel?
So the segment ended seriously, but up until that point, really, it was very comedic, and that's all I'm taking out of that. The podium breaking on the Big Show, one of the funniest things I've seen in a while.
That was the best part of the whole segment for me, was just when that podium just, you know, and Big Show obviously tried to cover it by saying he leaned on the podium, but let's face it, if you go back and you look at it again, he was nowhere near it, and it just collapsed on its own. And it was just indicative of all the kind of problems that the production crew was having that night. Hey, there were a lot
of technical problems on Monday's Raw.
Like, you had music coming on at the wrong time.
The wrong graphic.
You had, what was the other one? Oh, yeah, you had Jim Ross being audible during a backstage segment. Just, yeah, there was tons of production issues on this week's Raw.
But one thing I did notice was Big Show, and he's just so good at covering mistakes.
Yes.
You know, that is part of being a good professional wrestler.
Just a good performer, actor in general, is being able to cover things on the fly, right?
And the way Big Show covered that podium breaking to me was just beautiful, and it made the segment. Now, you had brought up a good point earlier today when we were talking about Sheamus and how you feel that they're kind of making this guy to be the John Cena, the great guy, the good guy, I should say, of SmackDown.
He's just a very similar character to John Cena. He's the, you know, he's the big, tough, comedic guy, doesn't take his opponent seriously at all, you know. And when you don't take your opponent seriously, it kind of, you kind of lose that buy-in to the whole angle and to the whole feud, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. But the younger generation definitely would like
it. I'm sure they like it, but
look at the video that he threw to up on the Titantron during this segment. The tout video.
So bad.
Sheamus throwing to a tout video of himself wearing a paper Rey Mysterio mask.
Rey Mysterio O'Sullivan. That was what his name was.
It's pretty obvious at this point that Sheamus is geared for the younger generation. But it's a very good comparison, James. When you said that, I was like, yeah, you're right, man. This guy is becoming the John Cena
they're trying
SmackDown.
They're trying to make him like the you know, the face of SmackDown.
Is that a good idea?
Is it a good idea? Well, probably. You do need like a face, a focal point for the SmackDown show. Is Sheamus a good idea for it? No, I don't know. I don't like Sheamus personally, but I can see his appeal to, like you were saying, the younger generation. So maybe that's why they're, I don't know, continuing on with him. And I'm sure, you know, he's got friends in the right places, if you know what I mean.
We've touched on that before.
We've touched on that before, yeah.
One last guy I want to talk about before we wrap up Tale of the Tape is Antonio Cesaro. Very impressive showing this past Monday against Brodus Clay.
Hitting
really,
that neutralizer on him? Wow.
And really, Brodus Clay is also another topic for another time. But in terms of Antonio Cesaro, he is the United States champion. He's very impressive. Your thoughts on how far this guy actually could go?
I think Cesaro could go actually quite a long ways. He's very talented, but he hasn't had the opportunity to showcase it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And let's face it, that neutralizer that he hit on Brodus Clay, that was very impressive. So,
not to mention just the idea that this guy can speak five different languages. To me, that just has good ambassador for the WWE written all over it.
You got to use it properly, though. The whole, like, what was the whole point of saying appreciation in five different languages? Did you get that? Like, I totally did not get what that was in reference to at all.
It doesn't matter. It's the fact that he can brag about speaking five different languages.
So why wouldn't you say, like, why would you say appreciation? Why wouldn't you say dominate or something? Or smash or, you know what I mean?
I agree.
Something aggressive.
I guess it's because we're supposed to appreciate the United States champion.
Well, I guess, yeah.
But I think he's doing very well with what he's been given so far, and he came out of left field.
Yeah, he did.
You know, and
he was the FCW champion, Claudio Castagnoli,
mm-hmm.
and then they brought him up and made him Antonio Cesaro.
I do you like that he's gone from Oksana, or that he split from Oksana?
No, I personally think that he could have used Oksana a little bit more. They had a very good dichotomy together.
Well, you had this lady who was just oogling over this guy, and that was working.
And that really helps to get new guys over, is when you have a very attractive valet or mm-hmm. you have a manager with them that's a good mouthpiece, right?
In terms of in-ring ability, he's very good.
Very good, very talented.
Got the look.
Yeah, he's got a look.
We haven't seen a lot of, or we haven't heard a lot of him, I should say, on the microphone yet.
No, other than the five languages, yeah. So.
At this point, I think they're doing everything right with this guy, and it's smart to keep going with it, and don't stop it like they do with a lot of other wrestlers. A lot of wrestlers, they cut short too early, hence like Brodus Clay, but with this guy, they should really run with it. It's working. I mean, even I'm interested, and when I'm interested, something's going right. the Tale of the Tape segment, that'll wrap it up this week, James. Now, you want to introduce a new segment.
Yes, this is going to be a new segment that we're going to have each week on Smack Talk.
Unbelievable. Am I going to have to get a whole new audio voiceover made for this segment, or is it just going to be you introducing it every week?
Well, I'll leave that up to you, Mr. Technical Producer. But this segment, I like to call it TLC for TNA, where I just talk a little bit about what's going on in Impact Wrestling. And now this week, this week, we're 3 weeks away now, Corey, from Bound for Glory, which is Impact Wrestling's, like, big WrestleMania-type show. So they're really kicking into high gear here, really preparing for their biggest show of the year. Now, this week on Impact, Samoa Joe, actually, he won the vacant television title, because I don't know if you know D-Von. You remember D-Von, right?
Of course.
His contract with Impact Wrestling actually just fell through, and he was holding the TV title, so it became vacant. Samoa Joe won it this week after submitting Mr. Anderson with a rear naked choke. Now, also on Impact, Hulk Hogan announced for Bound for Glory that Bobby Roode is going to take on James Storm in a street fight, and MMA's King Mo is going to be the enforcer.
Really?
What do you think of that?
I find it interesting because I've heard rumors that King Mo is going to be coming a wrestler. So,
well, this is part of his
introduction,
I guess. Yeah, his introduction into it all. Now, also on Impact Wrestling this week, there is this storyline with Hogan and Sting where they were going to go to the Aces and Eights hideout and quote unquote take care of business. But before they got there, they literally, Corey, if you can believe this, they got kidnapped and had bags put over their head, and they were taken to this secret hideout, and they met the quote-unquote leader of the Aces and Eights, and in a muffled voice, he made a challenge to Hogan and Sting, saying, "You get two of your best TNA guys, and I'll get two of my best Aces and Eights guys. We're going to have a match at Bound for Glory, and if we win, we're going to have full access to TNA, and if we lose, we're gone. You'll never see us again."
Interesting.
So, I kind of lost my suspension of disbelief with the whole kidnapping angle, and you know, them getting bags thrown over their head and thrown into a van, and then all of a sudden the camera guy is there at this secret hideout. So
in general terms, though, has TNA improved upon when it comes to their shows, in your opinion? Has the writing gotten better? Have the storylines started to make more logical sense week to week?
Well, not lately, not probably last in the 3 weeks, which is kind of weird, seeing as how they're coming into their biggest show of the year in Bound for Glory here. But generally, this has been a way better year for TNA than in years past. Mm. Definitely a lot better product coming out. But like I said, in the last few weeks, it hasn't been the greatest. And then finally, my last note here is, as I was mentioning last week, Jeff Hardy, he won the Bound for Glory tournament. So it's going to be him versus Austin Aries for the TNA title at Bound for Glory. Now, this week on Impact Wrestling, they were actually a tag team together facing Bully Ray and Bobby Roode. And tension started to rise a little bit as Jeff Hardy kind of tagged himself in at the end of the match to pick up the victory with a Swanton Bomb. So that's how they're building it up that way. And that's
interesting.
That's what's going on in TNA. So
you had actually mentioned that TNA wasn't on tonight in Canada.
Yeah, that was weird. I was going to tune in there a couple hours ago expecting to see it live, and yeah, it wasn't on. It was weird. I don't know if they're not live anymore or what the story is.
Yeah, we'll have to look into that. I'm not quite sure. You know me, I've barely got time to watch Friday Night SmackDown, yet alone TNA, but I will catch up to it one day. But
yeah.
All right, we've got to get out of here. It's another edition of Smack Talk Radio Live. One thing we forgot to mention earlier tonight was we want your thoughts and opinions. We want you to join the conversation. We want you to email us onair@smacktalkradiolive.com. Send us whatever you're thinking about the world of wrestling. And if your thoughts are any good, we'll throw them on the air. You might even have some free swag heading your way. Now, one thing I also forgot to do tonight, James, was the Smack Talk Radio Live poll question.
Oh, the poll question. And what's the question for this week?
Ryback. Should he be renamed to Rybotch? Or Botchback?
I'm going to go with Rybotch.
I'm going with Botchback.
You're going with Botchback. Okay, I've got one last note here to quickly throw out. If you're in the Vancouver area, ECCW is putting on a show at the Sapperton Hall in New Westminster Saturday, October 6th. It's called Extreme Revival. The main event match is going to be an extreme match, which I'm assuming is a hardcore match. Triple threat, Sid Sylum taking on Ravenous Randy Myers, taking on Scotty Mack. If you want to find out more, you can log on to their website, www.eccw.com. Check it out. Local Wrestling Vancouver.
And also worth mentioning, you had one last thing. I have one last thing. Tomorrow night in Everett, Washington, the WWE will be having a house show there, a live event. It's going to be at the Comcast Arena, like I said, in Everett. It's a two-hour drive down the I-5 just before Seattle. You and I are heading down there, James.
Yeah, it's going to feature all your favorite Raw superstars like CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, Big Show, R-Truth, Brodus Clay, and Kane. Should be a good one.
And our man, Zack Ryder.
Oh, can't forget about him.
We should also thank him for coming on the show tonight.
Much appreciated, broski.
www.smacktalkradiolive.com, facebook.com/smacktalkradio, or at SRL Radio on Twitter. This was Smack Talk Radio Live. We'll be back next Thursday. I'm Corey Callahan.
And I am the man, apparently, James McDonald.
We'll see you next week.